Would anyone like to ask or share anything? You're still here. Still getting here? Yeah. Yeah. You want to what? Yeah. I think you put your finger on something important. Maybe before we go into that, I just want to mention that I, as someone had already asked, I do try to record the meditations and talks. And the idea is to make that publicly available. So if there's some time that you want to ask something or say something and you don't want it recorded, or afterwards you realize, whoops, I don't want like everybody in the world to have access to that through the website, just let us know. And we can... there's someone, a volunteer, who takes out the background noise before they go on the web, and I can ask her to find your part and take it out. So, could I ask you something more about your experience, or you feel like you said something and that's enough of a... So I'm just curious to hear more about what you notice in that, like how to be here, and is there a right or a wrong way, and or is there not, and how is that uncomfortable or comfortable? So let's start with the pointless. What would be, anytime it's for all of us, it's not only for you. So anytime we just broaden it. And so that just as a reminder to everyone, this is the Dharma. This is like the discovery of what could we know about what this is, what's going on, and how to be here. And is there a right and wrong? In what way? Or in what way not? So, starting with the sense of pointless. One thing is like just spending some more time, not too much time, but spending some kind of time, quality time, with is this pointless? Or this feels pointless? And kind of to get to the bottom of that eventually, which could take 1 year, 3 years, or more. And also it could be in the moment some starting to get a sense of. So for example, well, let's start with if anyone, including you, Meredith, feeling, if you felt that today or some other time, like maybe this is pointless. So it could be just even the idea of meditation or even being alive, like what's the point? And where do you feel that in the body? What does it feel like? Anybody getting a sense? Okay. So she's saying it's almost not in my body. It's out, maybe out here, and maybe hollow in my back. Did you say in the back? So could you see her? She's like like nothing and swinging through what looks like where her body is. Okay. Anything more come up on that?
And also like a nothing.
So if we would stay with the nothing for a little bit longer, and maybe like, do you believe that?
Not totally. Mm-hmm.
And so then what to do with that sensation? She said not totally when I asked if she believes that hollowness feeling. I want to suggest that you just stay with it, mm-hmm. and not try to put it into words right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if that feels. So, if it feels relevant to you, a feeling of hollowness in the body, with a feeling of pointlessness, then it could be interesting to stay with that feeling for a little while. Giving just even a few minutes of just like, well, what? It somehow might be very specific and also hard to get a sense of. And so just giving time for it to be felt. Even if you have a feeling that it's something tricky, something fishy in the feeling, it might not be the truest. There might be something hidden in there, some wound or something. Anything coming to your, anything you could say? Good. Could you hear? So she was saying, do you want to say it louder or shall I say it broadcast? Okay. She's saying, yeah, something a little bit coming, and it's a feeling of maybe misaligned. And then she said, not my fault, but something misaligned. That's just so accurate. Love that. And so that not my fault, misaligned feels like a very practical, there's practical things, like it's not abstract. If you would stay kind of near the sense that it's not my fault, and also kind of keeping still, there is the sense that there's something misaligned, but you stay near the feeling or the knowing or whatever, the glimpse that it's not your fault, what happens? And how does just breathing go? Mm-hmm. It feels like the only thing she can do. Okay. Does it change anything else? Okay, a little easier to sit with or something. And that's really good, Jinshin. She's grabbing her big toes. Did you notice that you were doing that? Like, you just were like, it's a little easier to breathe. And then she was like, chung. I mean, it doesn't need to be called Jinshin also. I mean, but I just want to affirm, like, what you did. that's the natural, just is helpful. And maybe that's sort of, it's a little bit easier to be with, then your body can just do something else that also is maybe helpful and is coming from a deeper place or another place. So I would also love to just take the question of pointlessness. In a almost like a the more idea of, so what if it's pointless? What's at stake? What would be wrong with it being meditation or life being pointless? What if it would be pointless to try to like artificially make ourselves be better human beings or something like that? Or just even life. What's wrong? What would be problematic about that, if anything? And what might be some kind of freedom in that? Another way to think about it is, what is a point? And when is it really helpful that there might be a point and we might get the point? And what are the limitations of that? So sometimes there can be a sense of despair in the sense of pointlessness, and that despair sometimes is a kind of pivot from wanting there to be a point that I get, and getting the point validates me. And when I'm not involved in trying to get validation because I get the point, but we start to enter this unknown, like, is there a point? Should there be a point? What kind of point? Really, like, to let go of the need for human reason and logic to be like the basis, the fundament of our living. Does that make any sense? Would anyone like to help me make it more clear by asking a question or sharing? It is so, I'm also happy to tell everybody who's younger than me, it's so good having a different, wide sense of timing.
I mean, there's not a lot of good things about getting older. That's one of them.
It's so good, though.
You have just more life experience and more things that happen to you. I really do think it's, once young, younger people tend to want, this is just not all people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
To be honest, but.
Yeah. And that's so normal on your first retreat. On the it, this is day one. And even not on your first meditation retreat, but your 20th. The same question, like, what are we doing? keeps coming around. So what I have in mind to say is these really short kind of four word sentences that not only it might not be something that we would even want to, because if we would understand something right away, we might miss all the other meanings it might have. So I have these really sort of, yeah, they're mostly like four word sentences. And we might just have a few today. We'll see how it goes. And then I have this pretty long poem, also by Denise Levertov. So I think I'd like to start with at least part of the poem. It's called First Love. It was a flower. There had been, before I could even speak, another infant, girl or boy unknown, who drew me. And then sometimes she kind of goes on and I just sort of leave that part out. So she's talking about being pre-verbal and feeling drawn towards another child. But that one left no face, had exchanged no gaze with me. This flower, suddenly, there was, before I saw it, the vague past, and now, forever. Nearby was the sandy sweep of the Roman road, and where we sat, the grass was thin. From a bare patch of that poor soil, solitary, sprang the flower, face upturned, looking completely, openly, into my eyes. So that's about halfway through. Sometimes it's hard to just hear poetry and not see it on the page or in a foreign language or whatever. So anything you want me to repeat or any question? To read it again. Okay. First love. It was a flower. There had been, before I could even speak, another infant, girl or boy unknown, who drew me. But that one left no face, had exchanged no gaze with me. This flower, suddenly, there was, before I saw it, the vague past, and now, forever. Nearby was the sandy sweep of the Roman road, and where we sat, the grass was thin. From a bare patch of that poor soil, solitary, sprang the flower, face turned, looking completely, openly into my eyes. Let a moment of meeting come to your mind, whenever it may come. And let us also start to find what is that mind that's conducive, both to remembering those moments of that upturned, open, fully looking, fully meeting. And also, not only the memory, but the happening. Not only with a flower. And so all these really short sentences that I have today are about what would, like, towards that conducive mind, the mind that would be, it's mind-body, body-mind, that's conducive to first love. And in the poem, she's talking about it as a once-in-a-lifetime event. And I'm not talking about it that way. She also has a poem called Once Only, where it would be like the first love and the first love and the first love. The once only and then the once only. And so I like to use this phrase, first love, to talk about meditation. And since it's something that seems to need a lot of practice over decades, and it keeps ripening, just amazingly it keeps ripening, to where I can say now, I don't understand why doing so little that I would receive so much. There would be other times where I could say the opposite. I don't understand why doing so much I seem to receive so little of wisdom or whatever. And so there's that feeling of the long time and the wide view of time that Suzanne was sharing kindly. But there's this first that's possible, like any time. And it really isn't always a flower. Even that really cool flower that can grow out of bare ground in a place that was used as a road for thousands and thousands of years. And that's amazing, and that's a great metaphor for first love experience with that particular irritation or that particular hollowness or just that moss on the bark in the light right there or this breath. And it's so disorienting. And that's part of why coming to we hear meditation through deep rest and we think it's going to be so easy. And yet we do know ourselves to be unrestful. We know it will be a challenge. But even more challenging than finding a more restful way, a doing less way, a less interference way of being here. Even more challenging than that is what's revealed when we're not covering it up with all of our trying too hard or doing it in a certain way that's right or how wrong I am. It's utterly, I mean, surprising is just too mild of a word. But it is utterly surprising. And new and upsetting. And so it's confusing, because then the deep resting is revealing experience, just the out-breath, or just the sun on the pine straw, or the sound of the mosquito, or whatever. That's not tamed by what we already experienced before. It doesn't obey where we were pointing. It's like marvelously pointless, which could mean it has so many points that our mind cannot grasp it. We get little hints from time to time, like Suzanne was saying, that we can say, oh, well, that was a good part of walking towards the fire. So some of the things that I found helpful that can start to come clear when we pay attention to what our experience is and not what we expected it to be. So helpful, but so easy to forget, and even almost as we realize, forget. And so one of them is intuition is not emotion. When we're having, it's like an easy situation, that usually gets confused. It's like, what feels good? My intuition, it feels good to go with my intuition. And then it's like, well, what feels good must be my intuition, mostly. And in this harder situation, even deciding to come here, there might have been emotion. And even if you feel yourself not so emotional, you might have then noticed the emotion as like lots of crisscross thinking that came from the emotional tone that you weren't aware of. So whether it was like intense thinking or different emotions that might have come. Some people might not have had that, but. Sometimes when it's a more difficult situation, it can help actually let the oil and water separate and feel this is emotion and this is intuition. Is there anything someone wants to ask or say or share about that?
I'm just so glad that you said all that. Even as the words walk going towards the fire, it's like setting something. Mm-hmm. Like not having to feel special about even that process.
Yeah. Could you hear? Mm-hmm. So shall I or shall I? She was thanking me for saying what I said, and even the saying of the going towards the fire helped something drop from specialness into just, okay, fine and shared. That's a shared experience that also is fine. Which I'll say, by the way, isn't a guarantee that it's going to be possible to stay the whole week. We don't know. But it's still fine.
Yeah, like, I'm really thankful for what this experience of coming here has let me see already, just even in, like, getting down here.
Yeah.
Like, the few days before and how intense the process felt for me.
Yeah.
And just what you were speaking to, like, really doing so much sifting and
I think healing around intuition, superstition, old programming, looking for signs, asking other people to tell you what to do, knowing a feeling in your body, knowing when you're overriding a feeling in your animal body for some reason that you don't know yet, or like, just it's been so unique.
Yeah.
Already, even if it ended tomorrow, it's even mm-hmm. it is so unique. And I guess I don't have a formed question, but I'm really curious about the process of knowing in a world that's completely has been.
Knowing in a world that's completely unknown. Could you hear the rest of what she said? Not so much? In summary? Well, you said it's been a really, she's learned so much already, the few days before, and also just even if the retreat ended tomorrow, she's learned so much about sifting, and she just spoke it so well, I won't be able to match that, but programming, looking for someone else to decide for me, said a couple of things before the programming.
Signs, superstition.
Superstition and like looking for signs to help decide. Meanwhile, she didn't say meanwhile, but a clear feeling in the body, also the overriding of a clear feeling in the body for different reasons. So all of that practice, yeah, is in a way an answer to your question. Mm-hmm. How to know whatever we might could know in a world of so much unknown. And so I might jump ahead to control is not safety, a second sentence. So some of the things that Jessica described grappling with or wrestling, we could see as different ways of trying to get control over where there's not control. And then the coming into an acceptance that there's not control, but it doesn't mean that a lack of control is automatically a great thing. But then what? So then what? And so something that we're willing to go with, learning from past mistakes. So she's described for us her experience, her past mistakes, we could call them, that were fruitful. So the need to make mistakes so that we could actually realize sometimes it's good to have input from other people, but when I'm wanting, kind of in a superstitious way also, trying to get a closure on an open-ended situation by you telling me, which is different from what resources have you tapped into? What have you found? What have you heard? Have you been around a fire before or whatever? It's not to say we wouldn't ask each other. But when we're asking in a way that's about control over something that there's not control over, what we're doing is going against our wish to be safe. By burning energy in control over what's not controllable, we're burning energy that we need. And if there would be a disaster is when we do really need that energy and resources. I just want to, is there anything that just came washing through? Or?
I just thought of just two things that, resources that were helpful on the way down, which was, if it's okay to share, one was a quick incident that a friend of mine told me that she had been on the street looking for a ladder. She needed a ladder for something just a few days ago, and in the process of looking for a ladder, she walked underneath of one ladder and didn't see it, and then saw, so she saw a second one, and it was like, the thing already happened. Like it, the ladder already was there, and she passed through it, and it like hit such a place in me around like what the big fear was about, like what know, you could die or something. Yeah. It's like, but it always is there. You want to be thrown under the ladder like a million
times. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And then a friend I saw the night before on my way down, who I did actually ask for guidance because he'd been at the mountain wall before alone. And
can you hear? Maybe if you shift so that they can.
Because
now we have the wind also.
Yeah. A friend that I saw the night before coming, who I did ask for guidance because he'd been at the mouth of the volcano alone, and I just wanted to know. I'd heard the story before, and it sounded really beautiful. He wept, and it was really intense, but I asked different questions this time, and got a whole different picture. He said, my legs were shaking the whole time, and I didn't want to go. And I was, like, angry, you know, but I had to go.
Did you hear the ladder story? Because that's such a great story. Did you? Could everybody hear that? Yeah. Exactly. And we can bring it back to that thing about the point. Like, if we have this, my point is I've got to find a ladder. And I'm so one-pointed in trying to find the ladder that I walk under a ladder and I'm not open to the ladder. And just how that happens every day. And it's something we can learn ourselves out of. That's what I mean about the mind that's open. Great. Amanda T. If you don't mind turning in, thank you. It's a good practice for my memory.
I was in this process of trying to help some sort of decision making about this fires and this retreat. Putting more and more pressure on myself to try and control what the outcome might be. And I noticed I got to a point, because I knew I was already going anyway, I got to a point where something kicked in and said, well, don't worry, you can leave. If you don't, well, once you get there, if this doesn't work, you can leave. It was like, some permission.
Yeah.
And then it just all changed, just all.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Cool. So when there's the pressure of like deciding, and it'll be any either or question, usually, because when there's pressure and control, it usually will start talking as either or. And then the coming back alive of an ongoing situation that's alive and is unpredictable, and no, and we're clearly saying we cannot guarantee what's going to happen, and we cannot guarantee even your safety. Ever, but especially in this, it's more clear. And then that, like, the freedom, sometimes it's like the terrible pressure builds up to such a point that it, and I'm like, oh, worst case scenario is what? I could leave. Oh, right. And it comes back alive.
Yeah, it's more in the moment.
Yeah. So that it doesn't become sort of like your ego on the line, like, if my intuition is to go, then there better be nothing bad happens. Because I went with, I put my money down on my yes. But it's just like, well, so far, I'm still here. So far, I'm driving up north or south. There was a kind of crazy moment the night that Shaharji, Erikaji, and I were here, and a bunch of others of you had planned to come that day, and Hannah was here, that's right. So the four of us were here of the retreat, and there had been maybe like five or six other people who had thought that they would be here Friday night, but it was just us four. And we were just checking the updates of the fire and the wind and so on, and we happened to see that there was a fire right next to I-80 in Vacaville, where we had stopped for lunch. And we're like, wow, maybe it's just going to be us four, or you're going to have a really long drive around. How many people will do that? And then that fire wasn't an issue. Is there any other question or something to share yet? Could y'all hear? Yeah. And so that one of my other sentences is like something along those lines. Better said by you. Inspiration is not excitement. Excitement is not inspiration or guidance. We tend to talk about passion and bucket lists. And we just easily start to think that activation is passion, and passion is leadership or guidance or wisdom, and that living without that kind of passion, excitement, which really is agitation, that living without that is not really living, and we lose touch with what Jay described, what Jessica also described, what Amanda also described. This flower, suddenly there was, before I saw it, the vague past, and now, forever. Nearby was the sandy sweep of the Roman road. So there just is what there is. It's not fancy, special, sophisticated, perfect, ideal. And where we sat, but we're in it, we notice it. And where we sat, the grass was thin. From a bare patch of that poor soil, solitary, sprang the flower, face upturned, looking completely, openly, into my eyes. I was barely old enough to ask and repeat its name. Convolvulus, said my mother. Pale, shell pink, a chalice, no wider across than a silver sixpence. It looked at me. I looked back. Delight filled me as if I, not the flower, were a flower and were brimful of rain. And there was endlessness. Perhaps through a lifetime, what I've desired has always been to return to that endless giving and receiving, the wholeness of that attention, that once in a lifetime secret communion. So the way that what we could call a meeting with what seems to be something that maybe we see or hear or remember, taste, touch, etc., smell. it's so disorienting that it has it's completely ordinary. And that the meeting that seems to be with a thing also somehow kind of grabs from the inside. But isn't an isolated, isn't a self-enclosed experience. It's also what can feel like a confusion of inside and outside. And so I'd just like to be unsure of exactly what she means in the end of the poem and leave room in case she might have remembered many once in a lifetime first loves and that she's talking about it that way. Because it's a really good description of meditation practice. And also a good description of the kind of pull, not towards that excitement of something special, whether it's the drama of a big fire that has a specialness, or whether it's an idea of some meditation state, or whatever it may be. A pull, so she describes being drawn towards another infant when she's a child, and she describes, perhaps through a lifetime, what I've desired has always been to return to that endless giving and receiving. The wholeness of that attention. And so we have a conflict with the word attention, because we've been taught to pay attention. And I think the phrase is really adequate, really appropriate. We've been taught to pay attention. And so I'd like to just come to another of my short sentences for today. Friendliness is not a two-way street. What I mean by that is friendliness is not something that happens as a transaction through a payment, whether I'm being paid or whether I'm paying. It's tapping into an endlessness and letting that be. Touching into a wholeness and letting that have you. And so the wholeness of that attention, where she's so startled by the openness and kind of intensity of the flower in its ordinariness. She's surprised out of the kind of two-ness into a wholeness. And her being recognizes that as worthy of being, of returning to, of being pulled. And the last two words, secret communion, I think it's really important. Because even though it's important to talk about this very simple human experience, it just very plainly, I think there's a way that it's also, there's some way that it's secret. And I like the word reverence. This year, that's the word that I like the most. So sometimes we might be startled into that wholeness of attention, where we a little bit forget myself. I don't remember to think about how do I look while I'm looking. or so much about me doing my attention, but were had. We're in a haven. And a lot of people talk about feeling scared. The disorientation is pretty complete for that me that I think I am. To be startled into that wholeness of attention, to be startled out of a sense of separation into life. And I think that as that fear, that feeling scared, the fear and trembling, ripens into reverence. Do you know the word reverence? It's kind of hard to... I think I remember that I used the word in Israel, didn't I? And it was hard to get everybody disagreed on the right word.
Lichvod. Lichvod.
Is there agreement on that word this time? It doesn't make sense? Okay. So I'll just try to say it, talk about it briefly. And then we'll just let it soak in a little. It's a confusing word and experience for us now in the mainstream culture. To revere something or someone is definitely to be humble. And it's definitely to put something else up, but not in an unhealthy way. And we're so much trying to discuss, still, I mean, it's been a long, you know, some centuries that we're trying to find out about equality and learn from the mistakes in terms of what can happen with hierarchy. But it's definitely like an easy way to maybe feel into it would be, and as Hannah had mentioned, that tonight at Bear O'Clock is one of the best nights to see the meteor showers of August, if it's clear. So bring something to make noise with, maybe, or whatever. But if you're awake, if you had some rest today, or you have to pee or something, like, usually if it's clear, and especially being here, it would not take many seconds before you would see some meteors, some shooting stars. The feeling of looking up at the sky, where it's not a bad kind of small. It's just true. And it's also not a small that's kicked out from the vastness. It's a small that's in the vastness. That's, I feel even kind of, I'm so glad to be part of that kind of feeling. I'm so glad that I belong to that, in that. It's a very warm-hearted feeling to me of like a vast love. And at the same time, it's just shocking. And I think that's like looking at the stars for me, it's that enjoying being shocked that I'm not in control and that I'm so small and that that's not the end of everything. That's like, we can survive being humble and small and not in control. But a feeling, the specific feeling of reverence, to me, what I mean by it, is with all of that as context, a feeling of wow, but also I want to serve you kind of feeling. Even though my service would mean nothing almost, except to me. I would so enjoy. Yeah. Like honoring. The astonishment that I feel through love. Something like that. And then that brings us actually back to the pointlessness. Like, I'm not asking for it to have a point. It just, like, is so much better than a point. For it to have a point. It's so much better than a point. And I'm not asking it to, that it, my service be important to anybody. And service would have its certain tone that's not quite right, but is also true. So if serving would be something like singing, then that might describe what I mean by reverence today. And that also just comes back to this sentence. It's just my sentence. It's not sort of like, it's not Rumi and it's not Jesus and it's not Muhammad and it's not anybody. But what I mean by friendliness is not a two-way street, is it's not a demand. And it's not like you first, and it's not keeping track. And it's the very not keeping track that allows something that feels like friendliness to come. And then it so happens that when I allow that to happen, that dynamic, so it kind of, it really feels like almost like a subtle physics and chemistry that we'll learn through our experience. That the friendliness that's just given kind of through me, through oneself, exactly when I drop the keeping track of shouldn't, because all those points, and just a point less giving up. And sometimes there's kind of a warmth or an openness that happens that does make a difference. It's not like that it has a point, it's not a transaction, it's not a demand, it's not trying to make something happen. And because of not trying to make something happen, a lot of things can happen. And certainly from one's own experience, the trees seem friendlier. It matters less if it's too smoky tomorrow to stay here or whatever. Even our view and memory of our past is just incredible how that changes.
So, can you say that again?
Yeah.
In not trying to make things happen, a lot of things can happen.
Yep. In not buying into the part of our conditioning, which would be fear, control, that is taught to keep track through, because it was painful when I was just unguarded and then someone hurt me, and that's true. So, but then the conclusion, so I better keep track all the time, is not true. And it doesn't mean stay unguarded either. In the same way that, like, just lack of control per se isn't necessarily a great thing. Acknowledging what we're not in control of is a great thing. But it doesn't mean there's not a path and craft towards mastery in some way. And what the mastery is not control of everything. It's not me in control of everything. It's reverence, in fact. It's where the singing, what feels like singing to me, so that's like feels good to me. I like singing. is in harmony, is in tune, is open to the ladder that I need. And wow, I only had to walk two steps. Only had to actually look up. Sometimes, I mean, sometimes you have to climb the mountain to make the ladder. You know, that's also true. It's not that it's all, but the right kind of wood to make the ladder that's going to last a lifetime is like something to be open to. I'm kind of mid-sentence, but I think it might be enough for today. Is there anyone that would like me to finish my sentence, or does it feel like enough? It looked at me. I looked back. Delight filled me as if I, not the flower, were a flower and were brimful of rain. And there was endlessness. Just feel really free to continue in the hall, standing, walking. I'll be available if anyone has a brief question, just maybe down the hill on the logs where I was sitting yesterday in that circle. I'll be there for a few minutes. Thank you.